The Good Liars.
The Good Liars.
This is boring.
We're boring.
I will die standing in my boots.
Herschel, I got you some condoms.
What made everyone so weird and sad that they had to come out here?
Oh, Mr. President, welcome to the show.
We are the Good Liars, and we are going to tell the truth. Trust us. Welcome to the Good Liars Tell the Truth. I am Jason Selvig.
And I'm DeVram Stiefler, and we are the Good Liars.
And we may be the Good Liars, but on this show, we are going to tell the truth. And the truth is, DeVram, we have fucked up this recording so many times.
So many times and so bad.
For various reasons.
So irrevocably. Although, here we are. We're actually doing it. We're actually going to redeem ourselves on this.
I got to ask you a very important question. And as always, on this show, I want you to tell me the truth. Okay? You promise me?
Honesty, yep.
Tell me your favorite name that ends with M.
I'm thinking Jim.
What's your favorite kind of dance? You know, there's like the jitterbug. There's the
So just your typical slow dancing.
Slow dance. Okay. Okay, well, maybe this is a better way together. What's your favorite thing that divides a room? There's usually four of them.
Oh, okay. All right. A Tim Walz.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, DeVram. You got where I was trying to go there.
Okay. Well, how lucky was that?
That is the big news this week. Vice President Kamala Harris picked Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her VP pick. We're going to dive into that decision, what it means for the presidential race. But before we get into that, we want to remind everyone, you can support us on Hero Hero for exclusive bonus episodes for just $5 a month. That's herohero.co/thegoodliars.
It should be noted that if you subscribe, like, you're helping send us to these places that we go.
Yes, it's true.
We appreciate that. And you can get full episodes of the podcast at herohero.co/thegoodliars.
Before we dive into this VP pick, DeVram, I want to talk about the bear in the room.
Yeah.
The dead bear cub with a bicycle in the room. I just want to read a New York Times headline here. And this is obviously real. Everyone's seen this, but it's not real to me.
Right.
You know, like pro wrestling, it's still real to me, damn it. This still feels fake to me because it's so fucking crazy. So this is from the New York Times. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. admits he left a dead bear in Central Park. Mr. Kennedy, an independent presidential candidate, confessed to dropping off the bear cub 10 years ago and making it appear that a bike had hit the animal. So we're at that stage of the campaign where the dead bear cub stories start leaking out.
It's funny how history repeats itself, yeah. So every time at the campaign, you get a story about abducting a dead carcass from an upstate New York road. Do you know some of the details of this? Can I tell you what I read this morning? Or do you know
how all of it unfolded. But can we watch this video first?
Yes.
It's a video of RFK Jr. and Roseanne. Of course, Roseanne Barr.
Of course.
She'd have to be involved in this in some way.
Gotta be. Again, history repeats itself, so of course.
I wasn't drinking, of course, but people were drinking with me who thought this was a good idea. And I said, I had an old bike in my car that somebody asked me to get rid of. I said, let's go put the bear in Central Park and we'll make it look like he got hit by a bike. funny for people.
And it'll be funny for people.
It'll be funny for people.
If you want to say the details of the story.
Correct any part of this you want as I go. But I just was reading a little bit about this morning. He had been up in upstate New York falconing with friends.
Correct.
Which I think that's relatable. We all know what that means, what that looks like, and why you would do it. Driving home, he saw someone in front of him, or driving back to New York City, saw someone in front of him hit and kill a bear cub.
Sad.
Then instead of doing what many of us would do, which I don't know, call 911 or some sort of animal services or...
DeVram, you would drive on. You would get
if it was off the road, I don't know.
Around it.
No, but okay. if you're not sure it's dead yet or something, you might feel the need to do something. No,
I'm not going to say what you would do, and I wasn't implying I don't want anyone coming after me.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
So he, instead of doing what many people would do, which is those things I listed, he decides he's going to put the bear in his trunk. that there are apparently laws that allow for eating of roadkill.
Which I support. Why not?
Which you support. Why not? Funny that he knows these laws, that he's ready for a situation just like this. You see a bear get hit by a van in front of you, you're going to put that bear in your trunk. He also puts the bear's mouth around his hand pretending to be bitten.
It's weird.
Which he later says, that could be when he got the worm, the brain worm, which he says he has.
The desecration of the corpse, yeah.
Desecration of the corpse will brainworm you.
Yeah.
So then he goes to New York City for dinner at Peter Luger's Steakhouse, if I'm not mistaken.
Of course, yep.
Dinner goes on for a while. He's not thinking about the bear in his trunk, right? He's got a dinner to enjoy. Then at some point, he realizes dinner has gone so long that he is going to be late to the airport. This is where the story falls apart. I don't think Roseanne calls him on this because she's not trying to grill him. She's just enjoying his company. He says that he's running late to the airport, so he decides to go to Central Park because he doesn't know how to dispose of this bear, and he's got an old bike in his car, and he decides to put the bear there next to the bike and make it look like it was a bike accident, and then I guess go to the airport.
So what you're saying that the problem with the story is, I don't know what he was flying out of, but if you're in Williamsburg, right by the BQE there, you're going to hop on... You're going to JFK or LaGuardia. You're not going to go. There's no airport.
There's no airport that would take you by Central Park.
Well, what about Westchester?
I guess. But when is it going to make the most sense to drag a bear out of your car? Now, I understand. Maybe you're not wanting to leave the bear in the car. But that was your choice. That was the choice you made when you put the bear in the car. I feel like you got to trace it back to the brainworm. Maybe that explains all of this and why the story isn't adding up. I don't know. Do you think there was drinking involved? I mean, doesn't this sound like such a drunk person thing to do?
Well, he said that his friends were drinking and that he wasn't drinking because he was sober at the time.
Yeah.
I just want to know, number one, the most important question, do you think this is going to help or hurt his chances at the White House?
It remains to be seen. Okay, I mean, some things that you don't think would help can help. Some things that you would think would help don't, like Trump almost getting assassinated. You would think it would have helped, but he managed to make it not seem to matter to anybody because he started acting like himself.
I like that he was like trying to own this. He was like, I'm going to get in front of this. Can we get Roseanne over here? She's like a pretty normal person that hasn't like said some like terrible things in the last couple of years. Let's get her over and I can tell the story to her. And even during the video, my favorite part is he's telling this, and she's just like, what? Like, this is crazy.
I know.
Like, during it, the looks that she has, right. It's like, what?
It's kind of like she's looking like the story is freaking her out a little bit, but also they're being videotaped, and I think she's kind of like...
Why am I being videotaped? What's going on here?
Well, and, I think she knows... She probably agreed to get videotaped, but I don't think she knew he was going to tell this story. I also think if she's like other people, some of us were aware of in 2014 when the stories of the bear found in Central Park circulated around. Do you remember that?
I feel like I remember people like making jokes about it, but like I don't remember the story being a big deal. And it's funny because like I read the New York Times every single day and I don't remember this story at all. I don't remember this. Maybe just my memories. Going. It's more about me. Maybe it's my brain worms.
It was a brief thing. It was just a couple days. People were like, the Central Park bear, you know, just an odd little moment. Well, RFK Jr. was responsible for it. That's so strange.
Do you think this costs him the VP ticket? Like Harris was like, oh, I think RFK is the guy. Oh no, this bear story. He did what to a bear? Oh man.
Was going to pick him. And then she was like, if this, what else, you know?
Right. Well, there's it's all out
there's going to be some beached part, whale yeah. story, and he's going to be like, we were out fishing, we
I had sex
a
whale, with a
whale.
I had sex with a dead
it.
Whale. Yeah. I don't know. It's not the craziest thing in the world.
The
yeah,
thing. Roseanne, where are you going? Where are you going? Listen to the rest of the story.
Come back here. Yeah. Come back here. Let's get Darlene in here from Roseanne and somebody else to talk to.
Oh, she would be so snarky about it.
She would be snarky about it. She always has some great one-liners. Okay, let's dive into the meat of this episode, DeVram. It doesn't look like the VP pick is going to be RFK Jr., unfortunately for him. But it is Tim Walz. And just the New York Times, what they wrote about today. Minnesota governor, former high school teacher, National Guard member, brings to the ticket Midwestern appeal in a plain-spoken way of talking about Donald Trump. When you got the news this morning, what was your first thought when you heard Tim Walz? Was it, who is this guy? Or
I mean, were you excited? I have to confess, I didn't know a ton about him, but then he's been in the news the last two or three weeks as this has been discussed, but I thought he wasn't a front runner.
I think it was him and Shapiro were like one and two going in. And then I saw this online, DeVrom. This is something that, you know, you have friends that know about.
I saw articles with just Shapiro and Kelly recently.
I think in the last day it was between Walz and Shapiro, and that was like the betting odds were that.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I have learned like a little bit of a crash course on him in the last 2 weeks, I guess, as he was kind of introduced through this weird primary on media, you know, like where people they're just out there talking to people, talking on news programs and things like that. And he grabbed headlines, and we talked about this last week, by calling Republicans weird.
We're not afraid of weird people. No. We're a little bit creeped out, but we're not afraid.
It's not about her or her opponent, really. It's no matter what kind of weird stuff they keep saying.
Donald Trump has been resorting to some wild lies about my record, and some of what he and his running mate are saying, well, it's just plain weird.
Just plain weird.
Weird.
We talked about this last week. An effective, albeit maybe stolen, insult for Republicans.
From some certain people we know.
Yeah. Yeah, we know well. But it worked. This has worked. The weird thing has caught on. And not that it necessarily like is going to work in a big, going to sway the election or anything like that. It's worked in a way that I think that ever since Joe Biden stepped aside, you're seeing Democrats who are like energized a little bit now. And they're having fun again for the first time in a long time on social media and things like that. There isn't like this doom and gloom. There isn't an elephant or a dead bear in the room with the Democrats right now.
There's like a joy to it. And it's not focused around fighting for, you know, this is, you have to cast your vote or democracy is out the window, like this just heaviness, which some of those things could be true. But this is actually just a fun way to poke at them, which they haven't had in so long. It's been so heavy.
Yeah, it's interesting because Donald Trump, he did try to overturn an election. He is denying the election results now. Everything that Joe Biden was saying about, like, this is a fight for the soul of the country again and all these things, like, this could be the last election. Like, it is true, but it also, like, doesn't kind of encapsulate what Donald Trump is. And yes, he is doing all these things and he is a threat to democracy, but he, let's just be honest, like everything he does is so, so bizarre. How bizarre.
It is. How bizarre. It's been years of this and I think we're like desensitized to it a little bit. And all those serious themes have been kind of drilled into our heads, like you said, for good reason, like this stuff has happened. But I think it's like, and it's allowed me anyway to take a step back and remember what we were first saying when he came onto the scene, like, this guy, really?
Right.
The guy who says all this dumb shit and is just so odd, and is his, you know, his biggest resume point is his show on NBC, The Apprentice. Like,
big decisions there, though. Big decisions.
Yeah, big decisions. The oddness of it all, I think, had worn off in place of the seriousness of this all. And what's the trajectory of our country? Now we can remember that, like, this guy with his painted face and his, like, you know, big weird hair sweep and just the shit he talks about. It's just an odd, it's just weird. And it's been in our faces for years. So I don't know. It actually, I didn't expect it to, but it's actually won me over a little bit.
For us, we, you know, being at January 6th and experiencing it. Yeah. Get it? You get it?
Yeah, I let it outside, and it's so happy.
It's outside, and there's no blood on my hands, literally. We've experienced a little bit of this ourselves, where we were at January 6th. We were, like, seeing the stakes of things. You saw, like,
yeah.
After what happened after the 2020 election was, like, traumatic in a way, just, like, because the country felt like it was falling apart, and you had
right.
a major political candidate and president refusing to peacefully transfer power. Like, that is a truly fucked up thing to have happen, and it made this election seem so serious, and it still is. But that is not, Joe Biden was not like having fun doing any of this stuff. You were just holding your breath and being like, can he read this?
Yeah. The older he got, the more frail he got, and the more tense this got. It made sense for him, but it almost felt like he felt he had to remind people how serious this was and that Donald Trump had to be beaten. And there, it was never going to be lighthearted, because we were all, I think himself included, just hoping to get through the next, you know, public appearance or the next hurdle. Like, there was never going to be a time to exhale.
Is he
going to
talk? Can he talk right now? Is he going to do it? Is he going to say... Is he going to call Vice President Trump? What's going
to
happen?
That was so tough. That was his press conference to win everyone back.
It was tough. The whole thing was tough. And I like Joe Biden. I want to say that. I like him. I really do like him. I think he's actually like really wants to be a good person. And that's why the whole thing was so tough.
How many people
backing up?
How many people have you asked for marriage advice and they've said, let me talk to you about that? You know what I mean? How many people in your life? Joe Biden is one of them. You can count him.
Joe Biden is one of them. I guess that's true. He's also the only person who said, I'm beginning to see why your wife left you. Just if we're going to be, just to play both sides here, he did say that.
Yeah, I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt here.
So the other observation that Governor Walz said about Trump was, he said, have you ever seen Trump laugh? And a not... When he laughs, but when he laughs, he's laughing at someone, not with someone.
Right.
How do you feel about that observation, number one?
It's good. It strikes at the core of like what we think of you know, good people and bad people. And I have a feeling they tested that one out, and it's been thought of before. It wasn't just, didn't just come out. It wasn't just a natural thing.
No, everything's organic in politics.
Right. That being said, I think it's the smart way to go. It kind of goes along with the weird thing. It's like, what kind of person is this? Stop talking about this like threat to democracy, which will have to be mentioned and people will talk about as it gets closer to the election. But like, what kind of person is this? It's the kind of person you want like around, you want in your lives again for 4 years that you trust. So I think it's a good line, I guess.
So now that he's the pick, Trump let out a
fart.
He let slip.
The biggest fart in the world.
He let slip a campaign email. I'm just going to read this. Tim Walz will be the worst VP in history.
Does this mean anything to anybody anymore? But okay.
Even worse than dangerously liberal and crooked Kamala Harris. He's that bad. And he's that bad as in red.
Whoa.
He'll unleash hell on earth, which is just like so funny. If you've watched like three interviews with this guy, who's like the weapon to him and why I think he's so effective. And why I'm like, honestly, like kind of excited about the pick is having watched him, you know, more in the last couple of weeks, he really is a happy warrior. And his charm is that he is this like Midwestern dad who kind of disarms you with this charm. And there is something that feels very genuine about that.
Right. He's also like a hunter and a gun owner and all these things that I think broaden the umbrella a little bit for people that might be attracted to this ticket. So I think it means more coming from him. Like, he's not like a liberal elite. You can't just treat him that way.
Javon, you just made me think, like, I want to see Donald Trump go hunting. I want to see like a video of him hunting.
Amazing.
Just like he's got the gun. He's like, yeah. I know how I've actually fired many guns. I love guns. They're the best thing in the world. Guns. I always said that. He's so scared of them. You know, he's just like worried about it kicking back. Like, I'm not judging him. I would be the same way, but I don't talk tough like that he does about it.
Right. He's probably like a lot of people who don't like handle guns. He would be not at home, like in a little huts you make yourself while you're waiting for like a turkey to walk by or something.
This is a wonderful hut. It's actually a great hut. Smells a little bit, but that's okay. We love smells. And it's like he's like tries to fire and ends up like, you know, shooting somebody else or something. It would just be very, very funny to watch him hunt. And
I
challenge Trump to come hunting with me and a real hunter, somebody who knows how to hunt.
And, let's also go hunting. Someone else.
That sounds like a threat. Now that I'm saying it out loud, it sounds like a threat that I'm like,
I want to have a gun. You go hunting. Okay. Just go hunting.
Go hunting.
He loves guns so much. Go hunting. That's all you're saying.
So I want Trump to go hunting, and I want it to be documented, and I think it will be the funniest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about some of the attacks that Trump and the Republicans are going to kind of throw at Governor Walz, and I want to show this clip of him kind of getting in front of these.
Trump is trying to paint Vice President Harris as an ultra-liberal. Of all her potential running mates, you might have the most progressive record as governor. I know you were more of a moderate when you were in the House, but you've legalized recreational marijuana, you passed universal background checks on guns, you expanded LGBTQ protections, you implemented tuition-free college for low-income Minnesotans. There's free breakfast and lunch for school kids. Do you think your record is an asset to the ticket, or would it risk fueling Trump's attacks as you being a big government liberal?
What a monster. Kids are eating and having full bellies so they can go learn, and women are making their own healthcare decisions, and we're a top five business state, and we also rank in the top three of happiness. Look, they're going to label whatever they're going to label. He's going to roll it out, mispronounce names, you know, to try and make the case.
I loved that response.
Yeah.
First off, he's like just naming five awesome things, and it's just such a great response, and it's like, there's just something to the, like, poking holes in some of the Republican talking points, which I don't think Democrats, first off, there hasn't been an effective communicator leading the Democratic Party in years at this point, but having poking holes in some of these Republican policies where they're like, you don't want to have school lunches. And it's like, why is that? Why is that? You don't want the kids to be able to have food who can't afford it?
It gets lost in like the regular political back and forth, and then when you're like, oh, I'm just saying I'm giving breakfast and lunch to school children. It's like, like a political football to be kicked back and forth? It's like, if you can, you should.
And part of it is like, they're like, well, you know what? Some of the people that are going to get those free lunches don't need it. They're going to be wealthy. And then you're like, it's like, but aren't you the same people that are saying you want to cut taxes on the rich? Like, what is giving back more? Like, five lunches a week, or like millions and billions of dollars in tax cuts. It's just fucking wild. It's just wild. Yeah. But I really appreciate it. I'm glad that there's going to be somebody that can actually articulate some of these thoughts right now.
And that seems like it's been such a big problem for a couple of years now, as like inflation has started to go down and the economy, although in the last few days, there's been some scary downturns.
Yikes.
But in general, there have been some things, many things that Biden could have communicated in a way that made people realize some of the incredible things he'd gotten done with the infrastructure bill and CHIPS Act and all this stuff. Like, four Republican states, Ohio is, I think, one of the biggest beneficiaries of like these chip manufacturing, the money that's bringing supply chains back to the United States. Like, huge things done for Republican states that I don't think people really realize. So yeah, and to your point, a good communicator would go a long way.
Okay, what I'm hearing now is you wanted a couple more of the
I did that. That was me.
I want to say a couple more things. Last year, he signed a proclamation declaring March 5th Bruce Springsteen Day in Minnesota. Yeah. I got to ask you a question. Are you okay with that? Bruce Springsteen, obviously, New Jersey guy, you think Springsteen, you think New Jersey. How do you feel about Minnesota? Pretty far away. Let's just be honest here. Not close to New Jersey. I think we can both agree on that, DeVram.
So that's a thing I think our listeners would appreciate us clarifying. Those two states are not that close together.
They're not that close. Other side of the Mississippi.
You know, does Prince have a day?
Prince has a highway or a bridge.
But should he get a day before Bruce Springsteen gets a day in Minnesota?
I mean, you get a bridge, that's forever. A day is one day, and it goes, and it's in the past. And we all know that time, we don't really understand it as well as we'd like to. So,
wait, are you saying this is one day every year or just one day once?
It's one day once. That's how those things work when it's whatever day.
Oh.
You didn't know that? Yeah. I officially declare this to be the Good Liars Day in Spokane, Washington. It's only that day. It's not going to be every, you know, August 8th. It's going to be
embarrassed.
Just August 8th.
I'm embarrassed. I thought he was declaring Bruce Springsteen Day every May 5th.
No.
So what was the question? So, let's get back to the question.
The question was just like, do you approve of him doing the Bruce Springsteen Day?
Sure.
I assume he was playing a concert there.
Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, who gives a shit?
Guy, who cares?
Now, I don't want to do a deja vu all over again, but here we are. We have a woman at the top of the ticket going against Donald Trump. And the vice presidential pick is named Tim. We had Tim Kaine in 2016. Now we have another Tim here in 2024. How are you feeling about the vibes on that one?
Oof. Wow. I've thought these things. I haven't really heard them said to me out loud. It's hitting me pretty hard right now.
Okay. I was thinking when I said it out loud, it sounded stupid. But you're saying it really hits you.
No, it's
okay,
real. Okay. I'm saying we're talking, we mentioned history repeating itself earlier.
That's right. Yes. The Bear Cub thing. Again, that happened in 2016 too. Yeah.
Yeah. That happened also in 2012 and in 2008.
That was Ted Cruz. He did it, but he snuggled the dead bear, for hours and hours in the
day. In his shed, in his backyard. In his shed. They found he'd kept the bear there, and it was rotting.
And he was eating.
He was feeding it
yogurt. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He was feeding it warm yogurt. He was eating warm yogurt. But that's typical Ted Cruz stuff. So that almost separate from this. That's cruising.
Yeah.
History repeating itself. I would say that is a little bit anxiety inducing. There is this like confidence, this excitement to break barriers and a woman in the White House and just would be this sign of progress and of just joining the modern world in some ways. It's scary bringing myself back to expecting that to be the case in 2016 and then being like shocked like most people were. That Trump won. So I don't know. I would say at least we have hope, which I didn't have for a while. So I'll take the hope that I'm getting right now.
Yeah, I'm definitely happier now. I would say that the Biden-Trump reminded me more of the Clinton-Trump than this does now because everyone—
Because of his pantsuits. Yeah.
Because of the pantsuits, yes, that he would wear, Biden.
Right.
Everyone hated— did not want the election, and no one was excited. And I think now it's like there's actual excitement going on.
There was enthusiasm for Hillary. There was also plenty of indifference, but there was some genuine enthusiasm.
Yes, there was.
I know what you're saying.
I'm saying that there were more double haters in that election, and this election mirrored that, where it was like there are people, most people were not excited, like a majority of Americans were not excited.
Double haters. Is that a phrase you just came up with?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No, that's a big term. That's a PT, a political term. It's being thrown around.
Double haters, just the people who don't like either candidate, wish the election wasn't happening.
Correct.
So have they polled the DHs to see if they've been declining in numbers?
Aaron Judge is all for it. He's excited about the election now.
Right.
The other big guy, Vlad Guerrero Jr. I don't know. I don't know if he's a DH. So let's just get back to the topic here. I don't know. I haven't looked at the polls. I don't know. I don't know if it's the same people or if there's the same amount of double hating going on. But the vibes are key, and it seems like people are more excited now.
So what rate the vibe a month ago versus the vibe now? Just give it a number.
A month ago, it felt like we were driving off a cliff, if not in the air, like the car had already gone off the cliff.
So out of 10. What's that vibe?
10 out of 10 as far as being a car going off of a cliff. And this one is like an 8 out of 10 that we're on the... We've got a car and we're driving it. It's on a road.
Yeah. No, this is all making sense.
And we're about 90 miles away from our destination, but we've got a quarter tank of gas. And we either need to fill up some more gas at some point, or we need to just make it through the finish line with just this little gas that we have in our tank.
It was a short analogy, but a good one. So better vibes now, I guess. All right.
I'm feeling that. Are you not? You don't feel?
Yeah. No, I am, but I just wanted you to put a number on it. You wouldn't do it, and that's okay.
I put a number on it. I put a number on it, but I did it my own way because I'm a storyteller to Vrom.
Yeah.
Two last questions. Vice President Harris has not done any interviews. She hasn't done, long press conferences or anything like that. Do you think she needs to be out there more, or do you think they are right to be doing this and just kind of riding this momentum as long as
they can? Ride it as long as you can, and if that becomes necessary, do that. It's just, it's like things are going well, and I think when steam runs out here, she will need to do what she needs to do, but it's almost like there's no reason to take unnecessary risks, I think.
I mean, it's talking to the media as the vice president or potential president, taking questions. Is that a risk? Should that be considered a risk at this point?
Ideally not, but if it's going well, you just don't fix what's not broken. I'm sure that she will have to be out there in a more consistent way before people vote. It's going to happen. But there's like the news of picking the VP, the fun people are having calling Donald Trump and his collection of oddballs weird. And it's a good feeling. The polls are headed in the right direction. I'm certain she will have to put herself in those situations. But it's like this, they, Republicans are saying, oh, she's hiding like Biden was. She's in the basement like Biden was. They're doing that because they're anxious for the opportunity to pick apart her appearances.
Right.
And so it's just playing into their hand to rush it. Of course she will have to do those things, but there's no reason to let Republicans dictate when and how that happens. Do you disagree on that?
I am like, you got the good vibes and that's great. And I think that things feel pretty good from the Democratic perspective right now, and that's great. But also I feel like you really got to go on the offensive with a message a little bit, which is, we won't go back is the big one now.
They're so weird. That's so weird.
That's the big one.
I want to stop you there for one second. Did you see the moment where we're not going back, where that kind of organically happened? She's giving the speech. She kind of says that phrase, and it's clear that it kind of resonates with the audience, and it gets a bigger applause than she thought it would. And so she kind of repeats it. It's almost like she's trying to move on, but the audience loves it so much that they're on board. And I think it means all these things to all these people. To people who are so sick of Trump's presidency, like the idea of going back to the daily craziness and the tweets and, who's right, getting thrown under the bus today. Also to like Roe v. Wade being overturned and actually feeling like we are traveling back in time with rights.
And it's the opposite of the Trump message, which is like, make America great again.
Exactly.
It used to be so great. And then this is like a very forward-thinking one.
Right.
Yeah,
forward-thinking.
It's good.
But also, do you think that was organic or not? Hate to be cynical.
I don't know.
I kind of think, not to throw a conspiracy theory out there, but it would just be good messaging.
Oh, here we go.
But it felt almost like she said it, and like it was like they wanted this to be the organic moment where the motto of the campaign came out, and I was like, I thought to myself, they could have done that if they wanted to. They could have fabricated that moment. It totally worked. And it's a great slogan.
Yeah, it's like none of the Biden speeches ever, the battle for the soul of the country, which I actually thought was like kind of a fine thing to say for, it's a political message, but.
Did you see the people were talking, it was like Obama was hope and, Biden is battle for the soul of the nation, and then Kamala is brat summer.
Right, just
like the way the world has changed, the way the world is right now. But whatever works, honestly.
Hey, people are having fun, and that's all that matters. Yeah, people are having a good time.
He's a good liar.
So incredibly truthful.
Bullshit. Oh. You lied to me.
Wow, you guys are such good liars.
Just a couple of honest Abes working it the fuck out.
Durham, I got a question for you.
Yep.
How would you like a moment of truth?
Oh, man. I love these. Grounding. Calming moment.
Do you mind if I take this one today?
No, please.
All right, let's have a moment of truth here. We're talking a lot about weirdness today And this is a very weird time for the Democratic Party right now. It's weird because there's positivity. There's good vibes. A lot of Democrats were depressed about the prospect of Joe Biden versus Donald Trump because they knew Biden couldn't communicate a message. But now it's a whole new world. Harris has selected a VP pick. And Democrats, for the most part, are still happy. People are still feeling good. And I got to be honest, that's a little weird that people aren't angry right now. But sometimes weird is good.
America.
And that is the truth.
Wow.
And I also want to say,
Sometimes
weird is bad.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about some of the bad weird.
If you're like, this tastes weird, that's bad.
Well, I was going to say, we're going to talk about, on our bonus episode on Hero Hero, we're going to do a countdown of the top five weirdest Republicans on Hero Hero. That's herohero.co/thegoodliars. I think you could probably guess who, in our opinion, is the weirdest, but there's going to be some surprises in there too, maybe.
Thankfully, there's no shortage of material for such a countdown. There's a lot of weirdness going on. A lot of weirdness going on. So join us for our bonus episode.
Devron, before we end this episode, I really got to ask you a question. And I want you to tell it to the people out there right now, if you don't mind verbalizing it in some way.
Sure, I'll verbalize it. You mean by speaking, I guess?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Do you have any words of wisdom for the audience right now?
Carry a fork with you. If someone tries to rob you, pull it out of your pocket and say, "Thank you, Lord, for this meal I'm about to have," and charge at them with the fork.
Interesting. Is that a joke from somebody?
Just, it was on the internet.
It was on the internet.
It says boardpanda.com under it.
No, that's just a meme bullshit. So,
but I guess the idea, I think it strikes at the heart of, you know, when you're facing adversity, approach it with humor. Approach it with an open mind, and approach it, if you have one, with a fork.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us on The Good Liars Tell the Truth. We'll see you next time.